Now back to Celebration Way at AirVenture and more of EAA Radio Live.
We're at the Welcome Center. I'm Farid Gio with EAA Radio Live. This is day three of AirVenture. And if you hear a little bit of background noise, that's the rain hitting the tent. We got a nice extended morning rain shower, and hopefully it'll clear up a little bit later today. You might be able to get some of the air show in. If you're around the grounds, don't fear. We always have a couple days of rain at AirVenture, but it always turns out right in the end. On stage with me right now is Rear Admiral Patrick McGrath of the United States Navy and Major General John Crowley of the United States Marine Corps. And we're talking about naval aviation. This is the centennial of naval aviation. And I want you to know that I got up early and I shaved extra close for you today in anticipation of meeting you. So I hope you appreciate that. The Centennial Naviation, there's celebrations going on all over the country and possibly other places around the world as well. But AirVenture has been dubbed a Tier 1 event, which means the Navy has sent a lot of equipment, aircraft, and people to this event. And Admiral McGrath, you were talking a little bit about some of the aircraft and also some interesting paint schemes they're able to see.
Well, again, there's 31 Tier 1 events throughout the country, and when we were having discussions early on about celebrating 100 years of naval aviation, I have a fellow that works on my staff named Rich Dan, who is a historian and an painter, and he suggested that maybe the aircraft we have today are all painted very low-resolution gray. Maybe we should start painting some of the aircraft in the historic paint schemes. So we have F-18s painted like Corsairs. We have helicopters painted like Vietnam search and rescue aircraft. And in Conoco Square, if you get a chance to walk around today, we have a half a dozen of those historic paint scheme planes here. And it really attracts the veterans because they go up to the aircraft that looks like the aircraft they were around when they were there. So that's turned out really good. In addition, the first aircraft to ever fly on and off a ship, the Curtis Pusher, is sitting right over here, a remake of it, right next to an F-18 that happens to be a green F-18 that flies on biofuels. So if you want to look at 100 years worth of naval aviation and the contrast of where we were and where we are, you can look out there about 30 yards from where we're sitting right now and see 100 years ago in the future.
I wanted to ask you a little bit. I think it was the F-15 where they're experimenting with biofuels, or was it the F-18?
The F-18 that's sitting right here is a biofuel aircraft.
Right. And yeah. Could you talk a little bit about how that program has been going?
It is a startup. Well, let me put it this way. Like everything else nowadays, money matters. And also, being good stewards of the environment matters. So this is, as far as I know, the Navy, this is the first attempt, and this is at the Patuxent River Test Center, for us to attempt different fuels in order to save money and also put out a little less stuff out of the back end of the aircraft.
Let's go back to something we were talking about in the last segment about the mission of the services. And, you know, in the prior wars, fighting involved, you know, surface contact, and you were talking a little bit about the vision depending on what era we were in. By World War II, the aircraft carrier was a major part of tactics. When was the last time that ships have engaged, Navy ships, our ships have engaged another country in battle? Can anyone remember that? Has it all been aircraft since then?
No. Operation Praying Mantis during the Iran-Iraq War, the Sablan and the Sahan, two Iranian frigates, were in a battle with two American frigates. And fortunately, things turned out well for our side. Before that, I mean, if you think of the start of the Vietnam War, was a surface action that is somewhat debatable as to what happened, but it was ships supposedly shooting at each other. But I think you have to go back to outside of Guadalcanal, the Battle of Tsavo Island, and some of the battles around Guadalcanal when you had ships lining up and just going toe-to-toe during night fights.
And so there you have where it seems like aircraft have taken over most of the major engagements, at least in the past few decades.
Well, it's a not to detract from the power of naval aviation. It is a combined fight, and it's if you imagine a battle space as a multi-layered cake, okay, and part of its surface, part of its subsurface, all the way into space, And certainly today, the maneuver from the sea is a complex arena of those multiple levels today. More complex, certainly, than what we think of force on force in World War II. But today, naval aviation plays a critical role in that. We have 11 carriers out there today. We have, if you double up the existence of the LHD and the power of the amphibious fleet, gives us over 22 types of carriers, almost 24 carriers out there today with the advent of the Joint Strike Fighter that's come into the service here in 2012. The Marine Corps have our first operational squadron in the Joint Strike Fighter commencing initial stand-up in 2012. So it is a very complex environment that with multiple supporting levels there in the naval space.
Let's talk a little bit about the present day mission, and one of the missions that's ongoing right now is patrolling the Red Sea and anti-piracy. How do you stop piracy on the high seas?
Well, my colleague, Vice Admiral Currier, is I think over in Traverse City watching this rainstorm right now. So one thing is, how do you stop? Well, always you ask the right guy, because if you want to discourage a fight, first you go in the fight prepared to fight. And we have the commercial shipping program out there, if that's sort of what you're asking. Our Coast Guard is not just a domestic force. It's an international force. In fact, Pat McGrath and I were talking earlier this morning, is that the lines between the naval forces have blurred over time between the United States Navy, the Coast Guard, and the United States Marine Corps. I command operations for the Marine Corps in Latin America and the Caribbean. I work very closely with Coast Guard aviation in the Caribbean. It was a major part of our counter-illicit trafficking program run through the Joint Interagency Task Force in Key West, Florida, in the 33 countries of Latin America, deep into the sea. That overlaps with the projection of naval power, and part of that's involved with naval aviation. And there's a very few lines that are that direct today. And so the Coast Guard plays a very heavy role in that, in preparing shipping for that and protecting ships from that. And you want your military forces to enforce the security of that. And it's an international coalition, too, especially what you're referencing out off the coast of Somalia, where there's more have-nots there than haves. And they're willing to do very much desperate things, as we've seen with some of the ships there. I think one of them was the Mobile. And Marines and sailors prepare for that eventuality every time they go out in a task force. And they're ready to strike, and very quickly, and all sorts of conditions, if they have to go aboard another ship to secure that ship.
Let's talk about, you mentioned 11 carriers are operating or in and out at missions. What combines a carrier task force? What is involved when the United States orders a carrier to a certain area? Ships, planes, squadrons, what's involved?
Well, think of what you're going to do is you're going to move an airport with an ammunition dump, a fuel system, supporting ships. So we're talking 5,000 people on a half a dozen ships, four fighter squadrons, Marine Corps fighter squadrons, tankers, submarines, oilers. So there's an old saying that when something bad goes in the world, the first thing the president asks is, where are the carriers? It's because you can, when the United States wants to tell someone that they're really interested in what's happening, they send a carrier battle group, and it comes not only with the ability to, say, break things, but these carriers we're talking about have a half a dozen emergency rooms. They have millions of gallons of water. They have nuclear power plants with the ability to produce electricity. So when things happen bad in the world, not just in terms of war, but the what happened just recently in Japan, where can you go to put an airport that can move stuff in and out quickly and bring helicopters and bring people that can help? And that's what a carrier battle group brings.
We will have more with both Admiral McGrath and Major General John Crowley in just a few minutes. We're live from the Welcome Center, and if you're still on the AirVenture grounds and you're looking for a dry place to hang out, there's plenty of seats available. Come on by and see what we're about here. Plus, the EAA Welcome Center has a lot of resources for members and potential members, including the Bugatti project that is also here. You can see that under construction. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to EAA Radio Live.